Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle. And I have one quick question for all you HR leaders out there. Are you tired of using those manual, messy, painful spreadsheets every time you want to do HR reporting or every time you want to create some type of HR dashboard to share that data and try to tell a data-driven story to your executives? It just takes way too long and it never turns out how you want it to. Well, look no further because Employee Cycle has created the People Dashboard built specifically for small and medium companies for you to be able to automatically connect with all of the most popular HR systems you're using to pull all your data into one place. That's right. We have pre-built connectors to systems like Bamboo HR, Namely, Zenefits, Trinet, ADP, Greenhouse, 15Five, Reflective, Office Vibe, you name it, to be able to pull all that data into one dashboard so you can view, track, share, and analyze all your people data in one place. Simply go to employeecycle.com to learn more. You can schedule a demo. We'll love to chat with you. And you can also take a spin for yourself at no charge by taking advantage of a free trial. But that's enough about me and Employee Cycle, because today we have an awesome guest. So please help me welcome to the show, Sonia Pasquantonio. She's the HR director at Connecticut Public Broadcasting. And today we're going to discuss how to support the mental health of remote employees during COVID. Sonia, welcome to the podcast. Woo! Sonia, welcome!
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for agreeing to be on the show. So, Sonia, we're going to kick this thing off the best way we know how, and that's by asking you, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Oh, yeah. So I come from a long and storied history of government work, military work, and as my very first job in the U.S. Air Force, I'm retired, was actually in human resources. So that's where I got my start. I retired in 2013 and then moved my way into the nonprofit sector, where I was a human resources director for the State Education Resource Center. And then a little over two years ago, I moved over to Connecticut Public Broadcasting.
Awesome. And can you give the audience a brief summary of what does Connecticut Public Broadcasting do?
Absolutely. So we are a public media broadcasting entity that houses both NPR and PBS, and mission-driven, providing all of the background and the news and the programs that you enjoy, if you're familiar at all with Sesame Street. We support Sesame Street as through the acquisitions. But we're also sharing out that information to our communities across Connecticut and the New England region.
Awesome. I don't know if you have this on your docket, but Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is one of my favorite shows. I love listening to that.
Yes, it is an acquisition that comes in from one of our sister stations. And that's one of the great things about working in public media is we have the opportunity to share with so many different stations who have wonderful content. And that's a great example. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Awesome. So today we're talking about supporting the mental health of remote employees during COVID. We're dealing with a lot of issues right now. I mean, 2020, we don't really have enough time to actually go through all the issues, but we do know that one of the most important and pressing and unfortunate issues is the result of the increase of mental health issues that employees are dealing with during COVID for a variety of reasons. And one of those is definitely remote work and isolation. So before we go deep into the topic, can you just give us a brief overview of how you're looking at the state of mental health during COVID, and what does this look like at a broad level?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I find it actually quite staggering, the amount of increases, or at least perceived increases, in mental health issues and complaints and difficulties as a result of working remotely. And this isn't just the employee. This is an uptick in domestic violence. It's an uptick in abuse cases for children, because what has happened with the COVID pandemic, where everybody has suddenly come back to the house and is basically in lockdown and isolation, There's no outlet for anyone anymore. And that used to be something that was available. So that's something that we're beginning to see. So you, first of all, have the isolation, and that isolation can be even within a family unit or within a single person. The secondary component to that is you have all of these stressors on top of that. You have people working remotely. You have people losing jobs. You have people suddenly, family members who are ill or who have maybe pre-existing conditions and how that might affect with COVID. And then the other element that you have is suddenly parents or teachers as well, when we went through the distance learning and now are returning to class in hybrid or sometimes fully remote, depending on where your location is. So that those are lots of stressors on top of your daily regime of stressors that are affecting people on a day-to-day basis.
As you were talking about the different things that people are dealing with, it made me think about a conversation I had the other day. One of my close friends, he's a high school counselor, and typically he has the luxury of having the kids come into his office and they know that no one's around. It already takes him a lot of work to get them to open up in the first place, but once he does, they know that they're in a safe space where no one else is there. But now the issue is they're home, and it's almost impossible for them to ever talk about anything that's private or personal that they would only share if they were by themselves. So I'm curious, how do you think that's potentially affecting employees in general, especially those that may want to go somewhere and try to get the help? But now that they are forced to potentially do it virtually, they don't really have that safe space to be able to talk when no one else is around.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, Bruce, when you talked about safe space. You know, beforehand, where you had maybe human resources or employee relations staff on site, an individual could come into the office and have that one-on-one conversation in that safe space. That isn't available anymore since so many employers are actually still working remotely. And although I've offered it on Zoom sessions or Google Meet sessions, we usually go to Zoom, it's not the same interaction. And that is exactly what your high school counselor was experiencing, is there's this background noise, and I mean that both literally and figuratively, in that it is becoming difficult to have a courageous conversation or a conversation that you would normally have on a one-to-one environment. I've even offered to meet some of our staff if they need it in an open public environment outside where they can have a conversation with me and we can talk through some of the issues that they might be receiving. And we've certainly seen an increased use, which is actually really good, of employer assistance programs. They are doing virtual sessions as well. And although that's extraordinarily helpful, that doesn't take away the aspect of not everyone has the ability to interact in these sessions in a space that is safe and that is allows them to be their true selves. And that is a COVID systemic problem.
For the HR leaders out there that are either working at companies that don't have these EAPs or employee assistance programs, or they're thinking about getting one now based off of all the issues that's going on with their employees, can you provide some examples of the type of services that they provide that are helping your employees currently?
Yes, absolutely. So depending on the type of EAP service that you use, and it's not a one-size-fits-all approach, it just is sort of what is a best fit for your company and your company culture. But I would certainly find a service that is focused on counseling. And counseling can take many different places. It can be family counseling, or it can take many different but it can take many different ideations. And it goes from either family counseling or financial counseling or one-to-one counseling when you might be having an issue. There's even supervisee or supervisor referrals that people can go to. So it really is a wider approach that allows employees to be able to have access points. But if I were to target a few kind of focus areas that I would recommend, one of those would be 24/7, 365 availability. And availability through, for example, a 1-800 or 1-888 number that can be easily accessible by anyone. The second element is most EAPs offer 3 services for free, and sometimes even up to 6 services for free. And if there's a continuum of care, then that goes through the appropriate medical provider. So I would be looking for that too. Obviously, the more free services that you can offer, the better. These are always confidential services because you have PsyDs, PhDs, and therapists on a staff. And another thing that I would think about is, what is the network that the EAP uses? For example, not everyone will have the ability, especially pre-COVID. If you're in New York City and you need a service that's outside of the city, you're not going to want to drive or take whatever transportation to get out there. So you want something that's close to your place that you live. And so making sure that the EAP services have something that's available to you in the region that you're living at so that it's accessibility is another important thing. And if there's extra bells and whistles on that, and there always are, then that's that much the better. But for particular COVID focused, I would certainly look at counseling, and that can go in the form of family counseling or individualized counseling.
Thank you for such a comprehensive answer to that question, because one of the things we're always looking to do is to make our interviews as actionable as possible. And so that really helped for sure. So when it comes to starting, because what you just went through were great actionable items, but what stumps a lot of HR leaders and just people in general from doing anything is not knowing where to start. Mm-hmm. So if you have someone today that could hope that or wishes that they could hit a reset button for how they potentially managed their COVID employer relations over the past 6 months, or they're okay with what they did, but now they just want to make it better, where should they start in regards to helping their employees with mental health issues? And what I'm looking for the HR leaders listening is, should they start with trying to identify which employees may be struggling with these issues? Should they start with creating a plan first? Should they do surveys? What does this look like?
That's a really good question. And, you know, the answer is really specific to the individual company. One thing, and my background is actually a master's in counseling psychology. And the one thing that I have to stop myself from doing all the time is, we are not counselors or therapists. We in the HR land, much as we want to help, there are people out there that are experts in their field. And the last thing that we want to do, even under the guise of doing the best possible thing, is to provide a service or a counseling or a treatment or a diagnosis to somebody that we're not empowered to do so. So first and foremost, if you think that someone is struggling, make sure that you're getting them to the right access points. And if you have an EAP, that would be your first start. The second thing to do is really talk to the supervisors. In most cases, and I can certainly speak for our supervisors and managers, they're well aware of what I call the iceberg principle. What you see on top is just kind of the mask. It's what lies underneath, and that's really where you need to get at. So in that iceberg principle, that's where you need your supervisors and your managers to be focused and connected and really dialed into what their employers or employees are going through on a daily basis, and have the trust in their human resources to go and report those instances forward. You mentioned surveys, and I've seen some success with surveys. It's really dependent on, again, the trust placed in whoever the person is that's aggregating the data for the surveys. You could probably get some baseline information. You know, we've done some COVID surveys to fairly decent success that kind of give a trend information or build a foundation to have deeper conversations. But at the root of all of this, the best possible approach is to have a one-to-one dialogue with the individual. And that can either come through a human resources lens or it comes through the supervisor or the manager.
And I'm assuming based off of that strategy of HR and the HR team having the one-on-ones versus managers, it's probably very dependent on your headcount size, correct?
That's correct, right. And it also depends on the manager's level of comfort. You know, one thing that we're really discovering through COVID is there is a huge difference in managing your workforce when you see them day to day in a three-dimensional component versus when you're managing remotely. We are seeing this uptick in what I would call silos again. Everyone is in this individual silo, and they're forgetting the interactions with others and how those interactions begin to spread sort of their tentacles out. So that is a training focus point that I've had to do, and I'm sure many HR leaders have had to do with their supervisors and managers, is to begin to look at what it looks like and what it feels like to manage a remote workspace and why that's different from seeing someone on a day-to-day basis. So I don't know that I necessarily answered your question. I think I went off tangentially.
No, that's totally fine. So one of the things that I'm now thinking is that that critical inflection point that HR always has to go through, which is getting executive buy-in, budget, and resources. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you look at the things that HR is asking for, something like this, helping with mental health issues, and you almost have to shake your head in regards to why isn't this a no-brainer? Why do you even need a reason to even do this other than it's just the right thing to do if you care any amount about your employees at all? But again, you still need to make a use case or a business case for what you're doing, and you still need to have some type of strategy so you look like that you actually have a plan. How would you advise HR leaders that are listening to go about this in regards to saying, hey, we're either going to take resources from here, or is this the type of thing where it doesn't necessarily need financial resources? It's more of a grassroots movement of how you're actually managing and communicating with your employees.
Yeah, so I think it requires both. Nothing in life is free. EAP services are not free, although I think you'd be very surprised at how they're not cost prohibitive. And if you think about the impact on the operation, this is actually focused on this, meaning the EAP is actually focused on a work-based program. And it offers these free and confidential assessments. It offers short-term counseling, referrals if needed, and even follow-up for people that have both those personal and or work-related problems. And because they're able to address this broad and complex body of issues that affect the very things that are affecting our operations right now, such as mental and emotional well-being, they can even focus on things that are becoming a little bit more of an uptick in, for example, alcohol, substance abuse, stress, and even family problems or existing psychological disorders. The EAP services, they actually work in a consultative role with managers, the employees, their family members, and their supervisors to address some of these challenges and needs. And which, by the way, if you have an employee that's suffering through this, their head is not in their operational work game. Their head is on the issues that they're facing. And it actually behooves the employer to find a structured way to address some of these issues, because it prevents and helps provide coping mechanisms. And even some EAP services offer emergency response situations for things like workplace violence, which, you know, thankfully we're not having that, but that's is something that's focused there. So if I were to make a business case for the EAP, it's a high return on a low level cost impact. And you can do a simple Google search will get you the best bang for your buck, so to speak. You can begin to interview different EAP providers to figure out what is best for that organization. And in most cases, they offer a per headcount. So for example, if you have 100 people, it's maybe $1.50 a headcount over a year. And that's the way that they roll that out.
Interesting. And then last question. As a company that's looking to make all HR leaders more data-driven and help them use their data to not only make smarter decisions, but also reach goals as well, my question is, in regards to helping employees with their mental health, how do you think about the goal or a win? Is it just by identifying employees and providing them services? Is it doing pre and post surveys to see if, in fact, the EAP programs and everything else that you provided is actually helping them? Is there a direct alignment to performance or engagement? How should you be thinking about that?
Yeah, it's a great question, because ultimately, if not served, there is a direct alignment to performance and, coincidentally, engagement. But I think in order to be effective, the very first thing that employers would have to do is to identify the folks that may need help. And sometimes that's easier said than done, because it really depends on whether they want to be helped. You know, it's the old adage of how you can lead a horse to water, but you can't force them to drink. And so you can make these services available, and you can do that in the easiest possible way. But not everyone is going to take advantage of those services, which is really, which is difficult. And it's actually something that I'm struggling with, is how can we provide the best outlet for people in the easiest possible way to get the help that they need, and have an effectuated change, if that makes any kind of sense. So it's a lot harder than, especially working remotely, it's a lot harder than I think we've experienced in the past. And I'm not sure that we've come up with a viable solution outside of making sure that people know the resources that are available to them, and really strongly encouraging and removing the stigma of receiving mental health services, because that definitely still exists.
Sonia, thank you so much for being such an awesome podcast guest and for helping us really break down and have a deeper conversation around one of the most important topics, not just in the workforce, but in general, and that's around helping people with their mental health issues as they deal with remote work, isolation, all the things that are happening and all the challenges we're all facing in 2020. So thanks so much for allowing me to pull all of that out of you and have a great conversation. And just thanks so much for being an awesome guest.
Woo! Sonia!
Thanks, Bruce. I appreciate it. I appreciate you. And I hope that everyone comes to you for use of your services.
Oh, thank you for the kind words. So, Sonia, where can people find you and Connecticut Public Broadcasting online?
Absolutely. So Google is everybody's friend. We're at ctpublic.org, and I encourage you to take a look at our digital services, our live stream services. You can stream in from anywhere and just take a look at some of the work that we're doing. It's pretty spectacular.
Awesome. And we'll definitely include all of that contact info in the show notes. So if this is your first time listening to the Employee Cycle podcast, and you came here because you're either already a huge fan of Sonia and you had to hear what she was going to say, or you thought that this topic was compelling and really important, which it is, but you're still hungry for more episodes, then please subscribe to the Employee Cycle podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other major podcast platforms. Also, if you enjoyed this episode as much as Sonia and I did making it, then please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes and wherever else you would like to say some kind words about our awesome episode. And last but not least, all of you amazing HR and people leaders, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.